Judges chapter 16, verse 27. Now, the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there. And there were upon the roof, or the balcony, about 3,000 men and women that beheld while Samson made sport, or literally while they mocked him, made fun of him. Then Samson, verse 28, called unto the Lord and said, O Lord God, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines who took my two eyes. And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars upon which the house stood and on which it was borne up. He took one pillar with his right hand and the other with his left. Verse 30, and Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he bowed himself with all his might. And the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people that were therein. So the dead which Samson slew at his death were more than they which he slew in his life. Someone once wrote that the life of Samson could be summarized in a single word, and that word is mediocrity. I understand why that writer would say that. For you see, Samson had unparalleled potential. He could have done, he should have done so much. For you see, the potential he had was unparalleled in all of Old Testament history. He was born into a godly home. He had godly parents. He was dedicated to God, consecrated to God from the day of his birth. He was called into service, significant ministry, even before he was birthed, actually. The Holy Spirit came upon him. Great gifts and strength was given to him. He could have done, he should have done so much, but at the end of his ministry, after 20 years, really it could be summed up in that word, mediocrity. You see, although he had so much potential, although he could conquer 1,000 Philistines, he could not control his own philanderings. That is, he was a he-man with a she-weakness. He was attracted to the fillies, that is the Philistine gals, you see. And this dominated and controlled and ultimately would destroy this man who had so much potentiality. Samson could have done, should have done, would have done so much, but ended up rather mediocre in many men's opinion. Now, it's interesting to me that although I would agree with that assessment, that Samson really missed fantastic opportunities. He could have done so much. And now we see him in this last chapter of his drama, of his story, as a sad, pathetic figure with his eyes poked out and his body bound up and is grinding away, pushing a millstone like an oxen day after day after day, all because he couldn't control his own passion. He couldn't conquer his own lust. And now this man, he's a tragic figure, it's true. And yet, it intrigues me, although that is an understandable assessment, a tragic figure, a pathetic person, a man of mediocrity, yet when we read in Hebrews chapter 11, of those few men that were inducted into the Hall of Faith. For in Hebrews chapter 11, in that great chapter on faith, there is a number of men that are raised up as examples of faith. They're inducted into the Hall of Faith. We see Samson's name mentioned there, incredibly. So Samson, although in our estimation, might be summed up by the word mediocre or blown potential or whatever, yet God in his economy sees something in Samson that places him in a very select group, those that were inducted into the Hall of Faith. Samson becomes a giant in God's economy, even though we read his story and we say, really? How can it be? We would say this guy is a loser or at best mediocre, but God says something else about Samson. Why would he be inducted into the Hall of Faith? It's amazing to me, but I want to suggest to you the reason. It's right here in the text that we just read. You see, Samson's life was mediocre, it's true. But in the closing moments of his life, even though he was humiliated and mocked and made fun of, he did something which blows my mind. There in the temple of Dagon, with a pillar on one side, a pillar on the other, he offers a prayer. He says, "Let me die." And he pushes those pillars away as he brings the house down literally upon the Philistines, God's enemies that day. And more were killed in that single act, when he said, "Let me die," than were killed during all of his life when he was Mr. Strong Guy. And I suggest to you, for your thinking this morning, I suggest to you for your consideration today, that Samson is huge in God's economy because he pictures, he portrays, he projects the person of Jesus Christ in a most wonderful way. What? Samson picturing or portraying Jesus? How can that be? Here's a guy that was blowing it with the Philistine ladies. Here's a guy that was proud and pompous and arrogant and all the rest. How could it be that you would dare suggest that he is a picture, a portrait of Jesus? Well, I suggest that to you because, well, you know the story there in Luke 24. Jesus, after he died and rose again on the road to Emmaus, he talked with a couple of men who initially didn't recognize him. And Jesus began to talk with these guys. And it says, beginning with Moses, the Old Testament first books, the Pentateuch, the Torah, and going through all of the prophets, he explained how all things concern him or point to him. Jesus took from virtually every section. Jesus could take from any story and say, hey, this portrays me. For example, we know he did that before he died and rose again with another rather mediocre guy, a guy by the name of Jonah. You know his story. Jesus reached back to the story of Jonah and said, now this Jonah guy, he pictures me. As Jonah was in the belly of the whale for 3 days and three nights, so will the Son of Man be in the center of the earth, buried, if you would, 3 days and three nights. And even as Jonah was spewed out, so will I rise again. Jesus was able to reach back to a character like Jonah. Talk about mediocre. And Jesus was able to say, this guy pictures me in this aspect, my resurrection, which is yet to be. And I suggest to you that Jesus could also do the same with Samson and say, Samson also pictures me, not in my resurrection, but in my death. As he stood there with his hands outstretched and pushed those pillars out and said, let me die, that the enemies, the Philistines, might perish in that single act So too Jesus would say, I also had my hand stretched out, and I too was willing to die, that the enemies, the demons, the hordes of hell, the bulls of Bashan, that all of that which is devilish and evil might perish, might be beaten back in this single act of my death. See, this act of Samson with a simple prayer and a last request of saying, let me die, as he stretched out his hands, is a picture of Jesus Christ, I suggest to you. It's true. You see, the rabbis of old had an interesting understanding. They declared that man was made in the image of God. And it takes all of humanity, through all of history, the billions of people who have lived, to portray God properly. Each person, the rabbis would say, portrays something of God. Every human being that has been conceived and has been born was put on earth to portray something of God. God is great and grand and glorious. He's awesome. He's transcendent. He's huge. And so it would take all of humanity. Each of us would portray some tiny aspect of God. And collectively, the rabbis would say that all of humanity throughout all of history are needed to portray God properly. You're around some guys that are funny, and they just crack you up, and you can say, hey, you portray God's humor. God has a sense of humor. I can see that by just looking at you. See? Other guys are sober and serious and deep and heavy. And God, too, has a certain degree, obviously, of sobriety. There's none as deep. There's none as heavy as he. Others are just carefree. Others are always concerned. Others seem to be melancholy. Others seem to be excitable. Others seem to be loud. Others contemplative and quiet. Now here's the key. I believe there is a truth in what the rabbis say. And the challenge for people like you and me is to say to anybody that we see, anywhere you're at, whether you're in San Francisco like we were for a couple of days, or whether you're in Jacksonville or in the amphitheater or at work or in home or wherever you might be, every person you look at, to say God created that person to portray something of his nature, something of his character. There's something of his image, and it's my job, my joy, to say, I'm going to look at him, her, them, and I'm going to say, there's got to be something for me to glean of the nature and character and grandeur of God. And it's my joy to say, not what a loser, or how could you be that way, or what's wrong with you, buddy, but rather to say, I'm going to discover God in you. That is, what God intended to reveal of himself when he made you in the way that he made you, you see. It's a wonderful way to live. My wife just finished a couple of nights ago. We've only been back for a couple of days, but she finished on the first or second night two big family scrapbooks of the vacation that we went on. And she has all these pictures and captions and cutout stuff and little souvenir type things. And it's real cool. I think she must have 150 books now done or something like that of family activities and all the rest. And it's great. And she's quite a photographer. And she takes good pictures and captures people in the right light and all the rest. Uses the diffuser when she takes a picture of me. You know, it kind of softens the look and all the rest. She's real gifted in that way. And I love that, because that portrays something of our Lord, who is full of grace. Grace. Putting people in the best light. Diffusing our flaws and shortcomings and all the rest. My son, Ben, for his birthday, got a little early birthday present, and we got him a digital camera. He wanted this digital camera thing, and it's way cool. And he also is into photography now. And he, Ben, who's 14, goes around with this digital camera, though, and whereas Tambo portrays the grace of God. Well, it says concerning our Lord that in him are found grace and truth. Ben goes for the truth. The brutal truth. He's a paparazzi. That's his new name. I'm a paparazzi. And he catches people off guard in their worst moment, you know, and snaps this thing. And it's one of those digital things, so it shows up right away and all the rest, you see. And I'm sitting there. I don't know if I should share it. I'm sitting there, and, you know, with my brother Jimmy and with Julie and with the cousins and stuff down at the mission. And Ben's watching, too, and he says, hey, Nana, to my mom, let's put on some pictures. And so we put the pictures on a TV screen from the digital hookup that you can do and all the rest. And he's showing all these paparazzi pictures. And all of a sudden, I come on full screen in my boxer shorts. And I say, Ben, what are you doing? You know, grace and truth. See, my wife shows the grace of God. My son shows the truth of God. They come together, you see. Now, one could say, so what are you suggesting, John? I'm saying this. I'm saying that I believe there's a truth to what the rabbis teach, that all of humanity historically, collectively, is needed to portray even something of the hugeness, the vastness, the glory, the beauty, the wonder of God. And yet, all of humanity has fallen. God had to then do something radical. Send his son to become one of us. God became like you. God became like me, yet without sin. He dwelt among us. It's called the incarnation. For what reason? That we can see God clearly as we look at Jesus specifically. So Jesus came to do what has been needed, and that is to declare to me and declare to you the nature and character of God. But all people can and indeed do share something or show something of his greatness, his character, his nature, his grandeur. And we ought to treat each other in that way. Every person that you come into contact with, you ought to say there's something of God in him or in her. She, he, they were made in the image of God. And I must not mock them or look down on them or find fault with them, but rather to say, Lord, let me see them the way that you do. Samson, I would say, mediocre. God says, but I see this in him. And he places him in the hall of faith. He pictures and portrays my son that day. Now, that's your assignment. Your assignment this week is to go throughout the week and look at everyone as being made in the image of God. And finding what you can, and esteeming and extolling what you see, and say, Lord, I'm not going to be cynical or caustic, critical or dubious about the people round about me. I'm going to find the good. I'm going to discover, Lord, what I can about your nature, about your character, about who you are as I look at this man or look at that woman or those people. Now, couple of thoughts, and we'll be through, that are very important for me and I hope for you. Samson here, in the hall of faith, a guy that we would say is mediocre, flawed, and he was, obviously. But yet he does something which portrays Jesus powerfully. He dies to take out the enemy. And this does two things for me that I want to share with you briefly. Number one, it's very liberating. It's very liberating. It's very liberating. What do you mean, John? I'm free. Because I know that I am a man of mediocrity. I know that I have potential and blessings and opportunities that God graciously entrusted to me. And you do too. But we have messed up. We haven't followed through. We haven't been good stewards like we ought to. Every one of us, like Samson, has dropped the ball. Every one of us, like Samson, has missed the mark. Every one of us, like Samson, has messed up. But Jesus, the one whom Samson is portraying, came to do what? To take out the mockers, the booers, the jeerers, who are up in the loft above me saying, you didn't do this and you're not doing that and you shouldn't have done the other and you're out to lunch here and you've missed the mark there. And these mockers, these demons condemn me. And Satan screams at me. And there is continual booing and jeering and hissing as they make fun of me. And the same is true for most of you. You too have heard the voices of the Philistines who are making fun, who are booing and hissing, mocking and jeering, who are saying, ha ha, you're supposed to be a Christian. You're supposed to be a godly woman. You're supposed to be a leader. You're supposed to be a servant. Look at you. Look how you've dropped the ball with your family. Look how you've messed up with those people that were connected to you professionally. Look at how you dropped it there and messed it up here. And those Philistines jeer and they boo and they hiss. But Jesus comes on the scene. And Jesus brings down the house when he cried on the cross, when he would cry triumphantly, "It is finished." The price has been paid for all of John Corson's sins. The mistakes that he's made, or the mistakes that he's making, or the mistakes that he might make in the future too. All of that mediocrity, all of that mess, all of that sadness you see has been paid by me, Jesus would say. And I've washed away his sin. And now he's in the hall of faith because there is no sin on his record. It's all been paid for, and that's the great news for me. I don't know if it's great news for you, but it is for a guy like me. I stand here today and I say, I'm so thankful I'm a Christian. I'm so glad I'm saved. Because I too know that, Lord, I haven't followed through. I've missed the mark. I've dropped the ball time and again. And Lord, my life should be branded with one single word, mediocrity. But Lord, you've placed me in the New Testament hall of faith because of your son, the greater than Samson, who came and stood on that holy ground called Calvary and was pinned with his hands pierced to that wooden tree. And he defeated the enemy. So all of their jeering, all of that mocking that Satan would whisper in your ear or that demons would shout in your face, it's all been taken care of. It's all been erased. I'm so grateful. I'm so thankful for the gospel. I can stand before you today and say, hey, I'm in the hall of faith. Why? You're mediocre at best. You're really quite a mess. True. But Jesus came. And what Jesus did on that cross, on that holy ground in that temple called Calvary, as he took the house down, he beat back Satan's accusations because he paid the price for my sins and iniquities, and now I'm free. And all that God records are the good things that I have done. And from that, I will get rewards in that day to come. And so too for you. You're free, folks. This is the gospel of grace. There is therefore now no condemnation to them who are in Christ Jesus. Your sin and iniquity, God declares, will I remember no more. You're forgiven. I'm forgiven. We're free. Well, I know you and I think you're mediocre. Well, that's Old Testament. But in the New Testament economy, the Old Testament, you're right. It's true. I am mediocre. Just like you. But in the New Testament, here I am in the hall of faith. Here I am because my sin has been forgiven because of what he did that day. What a grand liberating truth. So Samson goes down as a winner, not as a loser. He goes down in Hebrews chapter 11 as one of those that was inducted into the hall of faith because he portrays what Christ did. Boom! Let me die. Let the enemy come crashing down. Let the Philistines be wiped out. It's liberating. Secondly, and we're done, it's illuminating. Because here's what I want you to hear and understand today. It's a great story. Yes. We see Samson with all of his flaws and failings. But then we understand that he does what Jesus would do. He portrays Jesus in that moment for me and for you. The cross is portrayed. The cross is seen. And so we now understand that in God's economy, He's exalted in the hall of faith, really. But it also frees me up. It liberates me, but it also enlightens me, pardon me, I should say. I'm illuminated today by this story. Why are you illuminated, John? Because this is something which you can do, which I can too. I might not be able to kill Philistines, or I might not be able to judge Israel. I might not be able to be a conqueror, a mighty man like I would like to be. But this I can do. Listen carefully. This I can do. You can too. Samson's moment came. Samson's fame came. Samson's greatness came. Not in the life he lived, but in the death that he chose. He died. And more were killed in his death. In that one moment of dying, let me die, more were killed. The enemy was dealt a devastating blow when on that day he would say, let me die. Not let me live, Lord, to be used by you, but let me just simply die. And you see, here's what you can do. You might not be able to kill Goliaths. You might not be able to take on Philistines. You might not be able to call down fire like the heroes of old did. But this you can do. Jesus said, if any man come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. You can die. And you will do more damage to the kingdom of hell. You will have a greater impact for God and be greatly rewarded by the Lord to the extent that you die. What do you mean? Any of you and each of us this week or today can choose to die. Die to who? Die to what? To your right? They're making fun of me, Lord. It's not right what they're saying, Lord. It's not proper. It's not fair. It's not good, whatever it might be. We can say, but Lord, I'm going to choose to die. I'm going to choose to let go of my rights. I'm going to choose to let go of my reputation. I'm going to choose to let go of what I think, and I'm going to die. You see, there can be no reconciliation apart from death. If a man and his wife are at odds, there's no reconciliation until one of them chooses to die. If a child and a parent are at odds, there's no reconciliation until one of them chooses to die. If two neighbors are at odds or two brothers are at odds, when people are at odds, there only can be one way to reconciliation, and that is death. Somebody's got to die. Somebody's got to say, I'm not going to defend myself. I'm not going to stand up for my right. I'm not going to do what I think ought to be done. But I'm going to follow Jesus, who, when he was wronged, chose to say, Father, forgive them. Who didn't deserve to be crucified on the tree, but chose to die for you and me, that we might be reconciled, you see. I wonder today, right now, right here, I wonder if there might be people in this amphitheater. Right now you are stressed out at your husband. Women? Anybody? Don't raise your hand. Any wife here that would say, I'm stressed out with my husband. I just can't believe that he's wanting to go there or do this or lead us in that way. I can't. Die, lady. Die. Let it go. But he's wrong. Let it go. Jesus did. He died. He wasn't wrong. His words and his ways were right. But he knew that there could be no reconciliation without death. There could not be reconciliation between man and God without there being death, and he chose to die. What about that, teenager? I know you think your dad's an idiot or your mom is unfair, but here's what you can do to be great today. You might not be able to lead a revival on the campus of North or South or Impact Soc or whatever it might be in a big time way, but here's what you can do. The greatest thing you can do is die to yourself today and say, Lord, I'm going to die. Like Samson prayed, like Jesus did. I'm going to die. I'm not going to demand my ways or my point of view or my rights. I'm not going to defend myself. I'm just going to say whatever. Mom, whatever. Dad, whatever. Whatever you say. But it'll kill me. Good. Because here's the thing you ought to know. Here's the thing you got to see. Why would somebody like Jesus want to die? Jesus knew that after he did that, 3 days later he would rise again. 3 days later there would be resurrection. He would be glorified, exalted, elevated, that he would ascend into heaven. Wouldn't it be something if Jesus was on the cross, not just for 6 hours, but for 6 days or 6 weeks or 6 months or 6 years or 600 years? He could have been. Saying, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to die. I've got my rights. I've got to make a defense. I've got to say this. I've got to be understood. I've got to have my way. What if he said that? It would be a tragic thing to see a man on a cross struggling hour after hour, day after day, week after week, month by month, year after year. And finally we would say, just die. Just let it go. When they came to Jesus that day, they were amazed because it was only 6 hours. And they came to break his legs to hasten his death. But you know what they discovered? He's already dead. Why did he die so quickly? Why did he die with such rapidity? Because the sooner he would die, the sooner would come his resurrection, you see. And the sooner I die and say, whatever, whatever, I let go. I'm not going to come down on you. I'm going to find something of God in you because you're made in the image of God. And I'm going to choose to die. I'm not going to be critical of you or cynical about you because you're made in the image of God. And my flesh might say mediocre or double loser, but wait a minute, God looks at you in a different way. And I'm going to find something of God in you, and I'm going to take this opportunity to die to me, because the sooner I die, the sooner there will be resurrection. The sooner there will be glorification and exaltation. And I tell you, I've gone through this, and perhaps you have too, where you're determined not to die. You're going to have your way. Your voice is going to be heard. Your point of view is going to be out there, you see, day after day, month after month, whatever it might be. And it's a bloody mess. And I say to you today, just let go. Give it up. Die and watch and see what will happen. The sooner you die, the sooner there'll be resurrection. Guess what? I can do that. I can't live the way I'd like to live. I can't do the things I'd like to do, but I can die, and so can you. Right now, you can let go of the axe that you're grinding. Right now, you can let go of the battle that you're fighting. Right now, you can let go of the grudge that you're holding. Right now, you can say, I give up. Like Samson that day, let me die. That the demons and the hellions that are in the balcony over my head might be brought down. That Satan might be beaten back. That God, your kingdom might be brought about in my home, in my heart, with my friend, in the community, whatever it might be. I'm just going to die. I wonder who today in the amphitheater here needs to die to something specifically. I wonder who today might be set free in a simple way by simply saying, I've dropped the ball. I've missed the mark, but this I can do. Like Samson on that day, I can choose to die. And hey, Lord, that's what I say. I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to give it up. I'm going to allow you to do whatever you choose, Lord. I'm going to follow you like you told me to. I'm going to take up my cross. Taking up the cross means choosing to die. Listen, by the way, taking up the cross does not mean if you have cancer, as hard as that might be, or if somebody left you, as heartbreaking as that would be. When a man takes up the cross, it means he's choosing something that is painful for him to be redemptive to others round about him. Taking up the cross is not when my back goes out or when a child is taken home. Taking up the cross is something that I choose to do and don't have to, but I've chosen to be redemptive, you see. I'm choosing to die to self to say, I want to see you do better. I want to see you excel. I want your walk or your life to do well. And so I'm going to die to my way that you might do better this day. That's what taking up the cross means. And Jesus said, if you follow me, here's the key. You deny yourself, you take up the cross, death. Why? Because Jesus said, if you'll lose your life, you'll find it. After crucifixion comes resurrection. I challenge you today, folks, friends, brothers, sisters, you who are in the image of God, and you all are to one degree or another. You who are children of God, and I hope that you all truly are or will be, who've opened up your hearts to Jesus, who died for you personally, I challenge you. Move from mediocrity into greatness. Not by what you do in life, but by how you let go and embrace death and say, I'm going to die. You too, like Samson, will find today hell will be beaten back. The temple of Dagon will collapse in, and you'll go down in his economy as a man or a woman of greatness, even though others might say, there's not much to you. God will say something altogether different about you. Would you bow your head with me? Father, I pray that this day, these folks, that we would find ourselves following in the footsteps of Samson. Oh, not his sin and stupidity, but in his desire to die, to see the enemy beaten back, the enemy brought down, the enemy wiped out. And Father, I know that there are issues and situations where we have not been willing to die. Forgive me, forgive us. And may this be a day, Lord, right now, where we choose to say, let me die, that the enemy might be thwarted. Oh, Father, I pray for those that choose that path and hear the voice of your Son and follow in that way, that they would experience resurrection. Father, forgive me, forgive us for struggling to stay alive, to have our way. Keeping back, Lord, that resurrection, that glorification that would come our way. Father, bless these your people that right now are making a decision. And with heads bowed and eyes closed, I'm going to ask if there are people in here that say, you know what, John, that's me. I know that I have been resisting death and I've been feeling bad about my life because I've dropped the ball and messed up. But I now see today I have an opportunity like Samson for greatness if I'll just let go of this grudge, this battle, this axe, this perspective. And I want to. I've been bitter towards my parents, or angry with my children, or mad at this guy, or upset with those folks. I've been demanding my way, and I want to let that go. Would you raise your hand and say, John, that's me. I'm through with that. I want to bring the house of hell down like Samson did. I want to bring the Philistines down, the demonic entities. I'm tired of having hell in my home or hell in my heart. Lift your hand, would you please? You that would say, I'm choosing death today. That's my desire. Father, for these hands that are up, oh Lord, meet us at this time. Meet us in this moment. Meet us right here, this hour. Lord, you know the issue, and we say today we want to let it go and give it up. We want to die, Lord, to that thing that we've been clinging to or fighting for. Lord, what others might say or think, it doesn't matter. We just choose to humble ourselves before you with hands up, because you stretched out your hands on the cross for me and showed us the way to resurrection ultimately. Lord, I pray where marriages are in trouble, where homes that are coming apart, where relationships are frayed, where lives are tattered, that Lord, the cross might come into play, that people might truly follow your Son today, that we might choose that way. Oh Lord, reconcile through death.